Hey there, I'm Matt Tommy, and over the last 10 years, I've helped thousands of Christian artists all over the world start thriving spiritually, artistically, and in the marketplace, while at the same time building my own super successful art business. If you're ready to bust through the roadblocks that have held you back for years, create the work you love, and really live the life you know God created you to live in His kingdom, then you're in the right place, my friend. Now, with over 500,000 downloads, you're listening to the Thriving Christian Artist Podcast. Well, hey there, my friend. It's Matt. Listen, I'm so glad that you are with me on the podcast today. You know, it's amazing how God brings people into our lives. I was actually on Facebook the other day, saw a great article on the Gospel Coalition website about a guy named Justin Stout, who I've actually kind of had a little bit of interaction with back and forth on Facebook Messenger, but we never got to talk. And I'm so glad that we got to talk today because it was an article about what he's doing in the development of what many people call patronage in the arts, actually developing a culture of advocacy for arts and the artists within the church and also outside the church. And it's just really exciting all that he's up to. And I'm excited to bring him to you today and just a great, great interview. Because, you know, a lot of times artists who are in the church, as many of you probably are, just like I am, you're not necessarily a quote-unquote Christian artist. That is, you're not doing overtly Christian subject matter or topics or themes or that sort of thing. And yet, you want to honor the Lord with everything that you're doing. And sometimes you feel like, I don't fit in the church. I don't fit necessarily fully in the marketplace. I'm just not sure where I'm at. And you can feel alone. You can feel jettisoned from the life of the faith community. And what do you do? And so what Justice is trying to do at Renew the Arts and all the work that they're doing is create networks and create mindsets and different ways of beginning to thinking about how we can all advocate for the arts and for artists within the life of the church so that that becomes an incredibly life-giving place for artists and all that God wants to do in and through creativity. So I'm going to get out of the way. You're going to love, love, love this interview with my friend, my new friend, Justice Stout. And by the way, if you're still wondering, Matt, how do you engage the Holy Spirit in your creative process? How do you create with God? How can I honor the Lord in everything that I'm doing creatively? I want to encourage you, pick up my book, Prophetic Art, A Practical Guide to Creating with the Holy Spirit. It's just come out. You're going to love it. You can grab it right here on the link here in the show notes. You can grab it on Amazon, either in print, in Kindle, whatever you want. It's there for you. And it's going to be a really great read and a really great resource that I hope you're going to go back to again and again as you continue to do everything that God's called you to in the kingdom. So like I said, I'm going to get out of the way. You're going to love this interview with my friend, Justice Stout. Well, hey, friends, I'm so excited to have a new friend with me today, Justice Stout, who is an incredible advocate for the arts and creative guy all around. In fact, is from the area that I spent a lot of time in Georgia. And just I'm sure we know a lot of the same friends, Justice. But so glad, man, that you are here and ready to share today. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's great to connect. And it's an honor to be on here.
Absolutely. So tell us, you know, for those folks who don't know about Renew the Arts and all that you're doing and that sort of thing, kind of give us the thumbnail sketch of who you are, where you are in the world, and what Renew the Arts is all about and your passion.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of the team for Renew the Arts is out of Atlanta, Georgia. I actually live just north of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Renew the Arts is a relatively young organization. We officially launched, I think, in the very beginning of 2018, but we were kind of launched out of a previous organization. So we have a little bit more of a history than just that. Without getting too deep into the story, our shtick for a long time was artist sponsorships. So we would support artists and the work they were doing. Typically, it looked like us financing the project 100% up front, bringing in professionals also who wanted to throw in on the project and volunteer their time. Once the project was fully complete, the artist didn't owe us anything, and the project was owned entirely by the artist. So,
cool.
It really was in practice kind of the patron model. And but what we've focused on recently is actually leaning into that even more a little bit, like trying to propagate that. So our new mission is very much around the idea of reviving the practice and spirit of patronage in the church. Mm. That's what we're really shooting for now. Now, the end goal of that is still to see artists supported, right? And our heart for sponsorship and our practice of that will continue and actually hopefully just grow all the more if we're successful in essentially creating or inviting new patrons of the arts.
That's awesome. You know, I can already hear in my mind, some people that listen to our podcast all the time or follow me, they're like, Matt, you're talking about artist sponsorship today. You're like the king of artist entrepreneurship. Like that's what you're always teaching about and that sort of thing. And, you know, so how are you guys even friends and talking about this? So I want to kind of start the conversation with you by this. I found it a really beautiful way that you phrase this. You guys phrase this on your website that artists find themselves often in between these two worlds of being a person of faith, loving Jesus, wanting to follow him in their life and everything, and yet not wanting to be, quote unquote, a Christian artist, not wanting to be labeled or pigeonholed in that sort of, label and that sort of category for themselves, because that can be, you know, very controlling. There can be a lot of baggage with that sort of thing. And so to quote you or to your website, it said that if we do that, the church loses a visionary, the world loses a missionary, and the artist is left alone. And I just thought how true that is. And so while I am all in for entrepreneurship and that sort of thing, at the core of my heart, and I don't know if you know this about my story and that sort of thing, but really the core of everything I'm about is healing and wholeness and helping artists to walk in community, walk in vulnerability and transparency with each other and that sort of thing. And I first of all, just want to say, I love the heart behind what you guys are endeavoring to do. So walk me through how that even began to blossom in your heart as something that you saw as a need and how you think that, maybe we can start there and then we can talk about other things after that.
Yeah, well, there's really two things to talk about here. So if we can bookmark the question that you ended with, I'd like to back up just a little bit at this, at what could potentially be a disharmony between our two approaches to the arts. And I really don't see it that way. I definitely see our focus being different, obviously. Yes. So we're doing different things, but we're really pulling in the same direction. Even though our whole thing is sponsorship and patronage and your thing is entrepreneurship. First of all, we're entrepreneurs at Renew the Arts because we're running a startup organization. Absolutely. So like that jives with us totally. But also like you wouldn't sponsor an artist who, let's say, sponsorships and patronage do not come to those who are not entrepreneurial, right? Like you're not going to any patron worth their salt or organization, grant giving organization worth their salt is going to be wondering, you know, they're going to be investing in something that they believe in.
Yeah.
And maybe you call it entrepreneurship, but whatever it is, maybe it's a hard work ethic. Maybe it's just a honed craft. All of the things that you probably touch on when you talk about entrepreneurship in the arts, these are not in conflict with the idea of patronage. Ultimately, the patronage is someone seeing a creative entrepreneur, perhaps, and investing in them in a larger way than perhaps just, what a typical market transaction would be for them. You know, it's more of a capital infusion. So I guess I'm just saying, they're definitely different focuses, but they don't actually, I don't think they're competing, you know, and the artists that you're encouraging, in our sponsorship of artists, let's say the ones who have shown those entrepreneurial qualities of hard work and dedication and consistency and all those kind of things that come with being an entrepreneur, whether in the creative space or not, those are the artists that we feel like we can trust with our investment of resource and time and finances. So anyway, Does that make sense to kind of like
pull those together?
I don't really see them. Yeah.
No, I love that. And I was thinking too, you know, so much of what we end up teaching out of necessity in an entrepreneurial model is talking about how to position what you do creatively in the marketplace for buyers. So we talk about this idea that you do what you love, you put it out there in the marketplace. As people respond to it, you continue to adjust. And over time, you develop a niche of people and a following and that sort of thing. And that's wonderful. However, and that's a wonderful model and people are doing great in that. We all know, though, there are so many artists out there that will never fit that mold by design. Installation artists or performance artists, you know, maybe, or, you know, whatever that is. And I love that in the model of what it seems you guys are trying to advocate for is really making room for these sorts of artists who may not have commercial viability necessarily, but are no less important right. to the conversation in the church and in the world. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where, that's where perhaps our focuses do find ourselves in different places, where you're really leaning into helping people find that commercial viability. And we're moving into that space where it's like, sometimes the work that an artist is called to is not commercially viable.
Yeah.
And if someone came to me and said, "Hey, my work's not commercially viable," I'd probably say, talk to Matt Tomey first and make sure that that's the case. Make sure you know what I mean? There's a sense of, it could be not commercially viable because you're not paying attention to your audience well enough, or you're not, you know, there are all other kinds, but there are legitimately times when an artist is called to a work that does not have commercial viability, but the work in itself is important and good and needs to be born.
Yeah.
A lot of times that has to do with the scope or scale of a work. Like if it's a really, really big piece, there are like almost no buyers for huge pieces. This is one of the reasons why cities are essentially, you know, cities or churches really are the ones that commission really big pieces, because there's just no other market. So anyway, it's like, what about, but even the problem there is that oftentimes, for example, for a piece in the city, you can only go so far in what you're in envelope pushing if you're doing a commission piece for a city or for a church, because there's a lot of, maybe red tape that you have to pass through. So for those reasons, or even if it's not a huge piece of scale, let's say that you're countercultural.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's room for a niche market. Maybe that niche market hasn't been created yet. So like, and this isn't to say anything against people who do have a market. There's a lot of very popular music that I'm very happy exists. But there are times whenever it's not that it's the scale that prohibits it from having a market. It's just its countercultural nature, or even it's just ahead of its time. And so in cases of scale, in cases of something being ahead of its time, there's nothing that can bring to light really important art like the collaboration that happens between a patron and an artist.
Yeah. That's huge. You know, I have to admit, when I heard what you guys were doing, I was like, thank God somebody is called to this wider idea of helping the church to to come back and get it, you know, if you will, to have this light bulb moment, if you will, of understanding support of artists and art in general, art culture, developing a culture of creativity. Again, I think when I started out, I was a worship pastor for a long time. So, you know, in ministry, that sort of thing. And I think my entrepreneurial nature just straight up so frustrated me in the church that I was like, you know what? I've got to go outside the church in order to actually do the thing that God's called me to do. Thankfully, as I did that, God had us in communities that understood that, support that sort of thing. But that's not always the case for artists, and that, you know, they can find themselves, as you guys say on your website, in between these two worlds where my church doesn't get me, the world doesn't get me necessarily. I'm trying to navigate this thing alone. That's we see so many people that end up joining our community, our mentoring program or whatever, is because they're like, nobody understands me. Like, you're the first people that we ever thought would understand. Yeah. So,
yep.
So talk about that tension, because that's a real issue that so many artists of faith are struggling with.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, it's like the number one thing that we hear all the time, which is why it's like right there on the homepage, but it's this sad reality that the church, which used to be a driving force, if not the driving force in the arts and culture, has become not even just apathetic, but at times hostile to creatives in their midst. Now, that's not to say that creatives should get away with anything they want to in a church context.
Sure.
I think that if the role of artists is important, that then it's important enough to have structures of accountability. But really, there is so little room in church context. Oftentimes, this isn't the case for every church, but in so many cases, there's essentially no room. There's no room for creatives to recognize their calling as being given to them from God, and to see their role in their local community or in culture at large as being needed and important and worth support. The video that you're quoting actually is called our Meet Micah video. So it's this kind of this character in the video that you meet for just a really short, you know, and it kind of walks through the dilemma that artists in the church find themselves in. That's based on my oldest brother, Micah, who was a singer-songwriter, really, really talented, particularly lyrically. But growing up in the church and writing music in the church, he found very little, basically no support, not even no support. He was basically encouraged to leave his creativity behind.
Wow.
And he ended up contracting cancer at a pretty young age. He passed away in his young 30s. And there was this really pivotal moment for me personally at his memorial service, with all these people that came out, and they talked about how crazy Micah was, but also just how much of a force he was, even when he entered a room or whatever, and just how influential he was to the people around him, particularly through his music, which people were still listening to now that he had passed away. They still had his songs and were listening to it and were being shaped by it. And I had this crazy moment where I realized that the church, the most influential people in the church are the ones being supported the least.
Mm.
And it was at that point that I committed myself to the Micahs of the church and trying to figure out how to, as much as in my power, to see that not be the case, see as few people have to go through what Micah went through, essentially.
Yeah.
And so I've put my hand to that plow and haven't looked back, really. So that's kind of the story behind that Meet Micah video. And that's a little bit of that's the reason I'm involved in it.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, as always, it's interesting, I think, for all of us as we pursue things in our life, there's always this beautiful seed that God plants and in our life that if we mm-hmm. water it, allows to, you know, to blossom and grow. So what are you doing? What do you see then as solutions as pastors and artists who are in this kind of situation or listening right now? What are ways that you guys are stepping out trying to help facilitate advocacy and patronage, as you call it, of artists? And what can local churches do and other communities do to begin to facilitate this in their own areas?
Yeah. Well, it's a huge question. So it's fine for anyone to have a mission of like reviving the practice of patronage, but like, where do you start?
Right.
What do you do? Such a big goal. And, but yeah, so the main thing, we researched this idea for about 2 years and talked to some incredible people, put together an incredible advisory council, but there are some really essential things that we think are necessary for calling people into this space or meeting people who perhaps are inclined to this but don't have much of an invitation. And I really think that personal experience around profound art is crucial. Mm. Christians have a tendency to talk our way around things. I think part of it is because of the preeminence of the spoken or written word in Protestant theology, which is important and right. and good in many ways. But a lot of times it has left behind the experiential. And so even people who have a high view of the arts and understand that arts are important because of the way that they kind of like impact us, whenever we want to see a change in the world of the arts, we still just like keep having conferences and writing books. And it's like, no, stop. So yeah, it's obviously a huge mission to try to revive the practice of patronage in the church. That's a huge goal. And how to actually go about that is an entirely, you know, it's a, yeah, it's a huge, it's a difficult question to figure out implementation. But one of the main things that we do know, or think we know at least, is that people become patrons not because they reach some sort of intellectual conclusion or because they attend a conference or something like this. People become fascinated with the arts, or even to some degree, if you've known patrons of the arts, become infatuated with the arts because of an experience they had around sure. art that was profound,
right.
meaningful. And so I know early on when we started talking about this mission to revive the practice of patronage, people were like, oh, so it's like an educational thing. You're going to educate new patrons. It's like, no, actually, I don't think that's how that works. You know, we're not going to have a patronage conference, right?
Right.
So
one more conference, right? This will be great.
You know, so yeah. Yeah, now it's a conference around patrons. Are you a potential patron? Wonderful. Here's a water bottle. Take a seat. We're going to tell you how. That's just not how patrons are created. You know, even you and I have a deep relationship with art, probably because of profound experience we've had sure. with art in the past.
Right.
Not because we read some book about art and said, ah, it is important. And here I go. And there's a lot of thoughts and ideas and potential implementations around this. But one of the key assumptions of ours moving forward is that patrons need profound experiences around the arts, actually, you know, themselves in art, in person. And so once COVID hit and all of these ideas were kind of coming together and then everything got put on pause, there was this odd, I don't know if you could call it an opportunity because the situation was obviously terrible, but there's this moment where it was like, all right, let's just pivot into this space now and let's launch a network of people. We were thinking particularly music, which is all that we do so far. We will be expanding into other media soon, but we were thinking about musicians who were all locked down entirely. Yeah. And it's like, they're trying to do Instagram shows or live streams. And it's like, really tough. And even the ones that are done really well are just like not the same at all. You know what I mean? The music hits you different when it comes through a laptop. And it was like, how are we going to get musicians on the road as quickly once COVID starts to let up as possible? And obviously traditional music venues are not set up for, you know, social distancing, right. outdoors, smaller crowds, this kind of thing. That's like every one of those three things
right.
is like against the model.
Not profitable, not scalable, not right. Not right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like pack them in tight indoors and as many as you can. It's like, this is bad. So what's the alternative? So we launched something that we had thought about previously. It dovetailed so perfectly too with what we're trying to accomplish, which is why we, you know, launched it. So anyway, we launched in October of 2020, which was crazy. In the middle of COVID, we launched this network, which is literally saying, hey, invite a bunch of people over to your house. we launched this network called Porchlight, and it's an arts and hospitality network, or a hosting network. And it's pretty similar to a house show network. You can kind of think of it like a house show network, but with the key difference that it's framed not around a place, not around a house, mm-hmm. it's framed around the host. And logistically, this makes things nice because there's flexibility. The host can do it at their home or at a friend's home or at their church or at their park or a business they run or whatever. So that really opens it up to a lot of creativity as to where to gather. But even more important strategically, by framing it around hospitality, this network to some degree becomes a sorting mechanism for the kind of people that I think might want to be invited into the role of patronage over time. Mm. There's this idea of like, what are the key elements of a patron? And I think so much of it is hospitality and the desire to make space for art at your expense.
Yeah.
Either financially or time-wise. So these events are really amazing in and of themselves. I would never say that Porchlight is some means to an end exactly. But while we have, so it accomplishes this need to have these profound experience, close encounters around good art that hopefully potential patrons, future patrons will be there for an experience, and it'll maybe flip a switch or, you know, turn on a light bulb. And then even moving forward, strategically speaking, we'll be able to identify who those people are because of the functions of Porchlight and the people who sign up to host or the people who attend.
I love that, the simplicity of what you're saying, that, you know, you're giving the opportunity for a host to just make room for, you know, to make a way for. And I think on a scalable model, that's what all of us are called to do in the kingdom, right? To make room for in our life, this dynamic of the fullness of the kingdom, whatever it is that we do. And I think, you know, I think about my wife and I are about to, we've just committed to a project with an organization here in town that we're going to be sponsoring to bring a muralist into town and do this huge wall on the side of one of the walls downtown. And I mean, so exciting. I'm excited about it. And I'm like, oh no, I'm a patron. Oh my gosh, this is, but this is great. I'm like, just like you said, though, it's like, it's something that we are profoundly affected by the work of this artist. We're profoundly affected by the work of the organization that we're working with. It's something that we have the means and passion to do. And so we're going to make that happen. And it's actually spurring a larger project into the city, which is great. And it's kind of become this catalyst point of some really cool things. And I just think, you know, being a patron and being an advocate for the arts, wherever somebody might find them, is really about looking at, okay, what's my circle of influence? What's God put in my hand right now? What opportunities, resources, relationships do I have? How can I leverage those on behalf of what God wants to do in the arts? And how can I make room for an artist to come and do the thing that God's called them to do? I mean, am I reading that right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, patronage is not a black and white thing as far as like, who says once someone is a patron, you know, if you've invited an artist into your home, especially to perform, you know, you've made space, then you're getting close already. Now, obviously there are patrons of different capacities or in different circles of influence or with even different strengths and weaknesses. But if you're making space for an artist, if you're really, the word patron means to champion.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're championing, and it's from the same word for father, you know, if you're taking that. Someone under your wing, kind of, if you're fostering someone's creative work, then yeah, you're a patron. I think that there's, the word patron can scare people off. And for that reason, actually, we're really shy to actually use it. It's so funny, in the Gospel Coalition article that kind of brought our work to your attention recently, the word patron is used a lot, and we don't typically do that. It's kind of funny, but Brett, the editor, really leaned into that idea and even that verbiage, but it can, the word can scare people away, and we don't want it to. We don't want it to, because it's something that can be done in small ways as well as large ways.
Yeah. We've talked about some of the maybe individual dynamics, a host making a way in their home or in a business, or like we're doing in our community. How do you see this happening with churches? I mean, do you see artists in residence, more art sponsored and paid for by churches? What's the vision that you feel like God's given you in that regard?
We're really leaning into personal relationships. And by that, I mean, relationships with people, not necessarily relationships with institutions. Now, that's not to say that relationships with institutions are off the table or even undesirable, but we've found that trying to make headway in the church or rather making headway in churches.
Right.
is very big distinction. We've made lots of headway in the church. We have found ourselves really frustrated at times, feeling like, well, whatever, anytime anyone, it's understandable. Anytime anyone wants a different way of thinking around something and they go to a church, there are so many understandable barriers. It's like, we already have a way of thinking, or we already have a budget. We already have all these things. So approaching churches and being like, hey, you should make a budget for patronage, or hey, you should do things differently. It's like, good luck. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
But what we have found, interestingly enough, is that by finding the people who want to be hospitable to the arts, a lot of them are associated with churches. And a lot of them have a lot of inherent trust, you know, built trust in a church community. And so all of a sudden you have either pastors who have signed up to host, or worship leaders, or just people who are really involved in their church and have a key, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden, the unthinkable 2 years ago of us saying like, hey, let's do an event at your church is happening all the time, which is, hey, this person signed up to host because they have a passion for the arts and want to host artists that are coming through town. And they happen to have access to the fellowship hall or to the whatever. And so they're just going to host it in there. And then all of a sudden, a lot of the people from the church come there. So it's an interesting kind of, I don't know. We didn't think our way into that. We just found our way there, but, it's a really interesting way that we found ourselves involved in way more churches than previously. And I think that will bear fruit over time.
Yeah.
We're not going to say, hey, we want to, now that we've done a show, we want to meet with your pastor and have coffee and, see what he thinks about patronage.
See if we can get a line item in your budget next year. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's not really the way that it's going to work. But our timeline is very long. We have basically a 30-year timeline. We're not going to know if we've been successful until 30 years from now. If we're not able to say we've built communities of patrons in 30 years, then we'll know we'll have failed. Which will be okay, because I'll be ready to be done anyway by that point.
Well, listen, I've still got a podcast, you're coming back on, and we're going to see if you were successful or not.
But. Yeah. Make sure you have me back on in 30 years. I'll give you the update.
Josh, this is mad. I want to have you back on. Hey, listen, I love the fact, though, if you think about the way Jesus went about, transformation, so many people, I think, because we're all in this kind of power structure of the world we live in, we think about, institutional change and that sort of thing. And yet that's not what Jesus did at all. Jesus, I think practiced this idea that if you change the people, the politics follow. And I think that's what, you're describing, that as we change the hearts of people, as people begin to get a vision for this, that's what institutions are made up of. That's how churches are led, is by people who have vision. And obviously that is a longer runway to change, if you will, but it's one I think that is this lasting and important. And I just want to lend my amen to what you guys are doing, because I think it's fabulous. I'm really glad to get to know you a little more today and just share what you guys are doing. I know folks are going to want to connect with you more. So where's the best place, Justice, that they can connect with all that you're doing in this movement?
Well, there's an email sign up on renewthearts.org. You can follow, if you're specifically interested in the gatherings, the porch light stuff, you can follow that on Instagram. You can follow Renew the Arts on Instagram as well. I expect most of your audience are artists, and I expect that if they're artists, they're interested in either figuring out how to play shows or find or get a patron. Our ratio of artist to patron is approaching zero at this point. It's not quite there, but we're just on the outset. So the chance of reaching out to us and getting hooked up to a patron is very small. However, over time, we hope for that possibility to be blown wide open.
Yeah.
However, in the meantime, we don't really have, what am I saying? We have a link that is basically an artist application that will be public in just a little bit of time. In the next couple of weeks, we'll be posting an artist portal, basically, on the Porchlight website, on the Renew the Arts website, and on our socials. So people will be able to sign up then. So I think the best way until then is to probably follow us on socials at Porchlight and at Renew the Arts. And secondly, to maybe sign up to the email list. So
awesome. Awesome. Well, Justin, yeah, I appreciate you taking question? The time, man. It's been great to connect with you. Great to get to know you. And thank you so much again for being on the podcast today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with me today on the podcast. Listen, I hope it's been a huge encouragement to you on your journey as an artist. Hey, also, before you leave, make sure to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any of the other episodes of the Thriving Christian Artist podcast. And also, be sure to connect with me on Facebook, Instagram, or at my website, which is matttommymentoring.com. Until next time, remember, you were created to thrive. Bye-bye.